Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about empowering each of us with the perspective and tools to grow and change. Thanks for joining us today. I'm excited to spend a few minutes with you, and thank you to all of you who have been sending us messages about this podcast. Our goal is to bring a bit of encouragement, positivity, inspiration to our listeners each week. So today, wherever you are as you listen to this podcast, I hope what you hear today can bless your life and help you live a bit better. And by the way, if you find these podcasts helpful, please share them with a friend. It just might be what they need in their life today. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to talk about a new way to view your life as you move from strength to strength. When Megan was born, she had no way of knowing that she was born into a running family. Her dad was an exercise science professor, and both parents were runners. So, running was in her DNA. And as she got older, she participated in cross country and then track and field. And Megan was really good. In high school, she became the first woman athlete to win four individual events at the state championships. So many colleges were interested in her joining their track and field team. She was one of the best 400-meter runners in the country. And going to one of the best track and field teams in collegiate sports was the fulfillment of a dream Megan had for many years. Headed into her freshman year of college, her training was going exceptionally well. Her running times were improving, and the future looked bright for reaching her collegiate goals. But those dreams came to a crashing halt early on the morning of July 4th, 2019. Megan and her brother Morgan woke up early at 4 a.m. and were driving in the early morning darkness to volunteer at a local race. Morgan was driving. The drive up the mountain canyon road was seemingly normal when Megan heard a scream from her brother and a large mule deer came into the road directly in front of the path of the fast-moving car. Instinctively, Morgan swerved to avoid hitting the deer, but in doing so, caused the car to fishtail, and then the car lost control. The car flipped over and over and rolled five times before coming to rest on its side, on Megan's side of the car. When the car came to a rest, Morgan, who sustained little or no injuries, climbed out of the car. The windows were shattered, as well as the sunroof of the car. The roof of the car was smashed in, especially on Megan's side. Morgan pulled Megan out of the car, and what Megan knew immediately was that she had intense pain in her neck. She kept saying to herself, "I just want the pain to stop." Morgan found a phone and called for help. Then he called his parents. Morgan, thinking because he was okay, Megan's neck pain was probably not serious, told his parents they were mostly okay. But when his parents rushed to the scene, they knew things were serious because Megan had been placed on a spine board, and Megan looked up to her father and asked, "Dad, am I going to be okay?" Megan's dad didn't know what to tell her. She was rushed to the hospital emergency room and then airlifted to a major city medical center. There, Megan was told she had a broken neck. C3, C4, and C5 joints in her neck were all broken. C5 was shattered. The images showed her spinal cord was crooked. The doctor said if the injury was just millimeters away from what it was, she would have been paralyzed. But for Megan, her dream of running at the collegiate level was forever over. Megan had a 7-hour surgery, rods were placed to stabilize her spine, and doctors rebuilt her damaged neck. Not long after surgery, Megan started to take her first steps in the hospital. Out of habit, perhaps, her dad timed her laps in the hospital hallway. And after a few months, Megan tried to run in the swimming pool on an underwater treadmill. And she did well. Then weeks later, she was able to run on a regular treadmill and then a track. 19 months after her accident and a lot of hard work, prayers, tears, and faith, Megan returned to racing. But the memories and trauma of the crash kept interrupting her life. When riding in a car, if they went over a bump, it would trigger a panic attack. The panic attacks happened on the track as well, and these attacks got so intense that Megan considered quitting running altogether. But with help, Megan realized that she had come so far since the accident, and the strength she had as a freshman runner, as good as it was, wasn't the strength she had now. Her new strength included the strength to overcome her accident, to cope with her recurring memories, and a strength to face her fears and show up when everything in her mind told her not to. And this new strength, developed by consistently facing her fears, has given her drive that she never had before. It gave her maturity in her running. 4 years after the accident, Megan became a first-team All-American. She finished eighth in the 800-meter finals. Just a few weeks ago, I watched the NCAA Track and Field Championships, and Megan placed third in the 800-meter final race, and in that race, she ran the third fastest time in collegiate history. And it's likely that she could run professionally if she chooses to do so, something that only a fraction of collegiate athletes ever get the chance to do. Megan says that having to work and fight to overcome has made her a better runner, a better person, and given her strength that will empower her life. Recently, I read a book entitled From Strength to Strength, and it started me thinking about the concept. And what I realized, and this is slightly different from the premise of the book, is that the journey we take in this life is moving really from strength to strength. That in different phases of our life, we grow and learn from one important thing to the next. Perhaps this is how God uses life to teach us what we need to know to be more like Him, or maybe just what life has in store for us. But I've learned that it's true. We move from learning experience to learning experience, from strength to developed strength. For example, what I'm strong at today is not what I was strong at 10 years ago. Today, my strengths are having more patience and understanding some things take time. I'm a good decision maker now, and maybe even a good analyst, and I'm apt to enjoy seeing others learn. Years ago, I was a driver and generated new things by my enthusiasm and effort. But what I wonder most is where I'm headed. What will my next strength be? Perhaps you're the same. You can identify strengths today that you didn't have yesterday, and I'm sure that there are strengths that you will have tomorrow. So it's true that life could be seen as moving from strength to strength. And if so, then if you were to make a map of your lifespan and record what strengths you have moved from and to during your life, you would then get a clearer picture of who you are as a person. And would your view of life be that God is working and using these periods of time and circumstances to make you into who you are meant to be? I think so. I have always believed that we all have seasons in our life, times in which our circumstances are organized such to give us experiences that we need. Some have argued that the weaknesses we have, and we've all got them, may have been given to us to help us gain more strength. In the scripture, Paul said that he was grateful for his weaknesses because they caused him to have to reach out to others for help and to God for the same. And this resulted in miracles that made his weaknesses turn into strengths. One scripture says that God gave us weakness to be humble. And if we are and seek his help, then he can turn our weaknesses into strengths. The way Paul said it was, God's grace is sufficient to help you, and ends his message with, for when I am weak, then I am strong. Now, maybe you have experienced the same in your life as I have. I have weaknesses that I've carried most of my life. I inherited a few from my parents, thank you, Mom and Dad, and a few I developed all by myself. I've tried at times to overcome those weaknesses. Some I have. For example, I've learned to exercise patience, something I didn't have when I was younger. But I have other weaknesses that I feel I can't overcome without God's help. These weaknesses cause me to seek help, and there is strength to be found when you seek help. Abraham Lincoln, the 16th president of the United States, is remembered as one of the greatest leaders in history. But beyond his stoic appearance and powerful speeches was a man who battled deep and chronic depression for most of his life. Even as a young man, Lincoln was known for his intense melancholy. Friends would often find him wandering alone, lost in thought, and sometimes even crying. He wrote poetry filled with dark reflections and once said, "I am the most miserable man living." After the death of his first love, Anne Rutledge, he was inconsolable and had to be watched over constantly. Later, after a political defeat and the collapse of a romance, he became so despondent that his close friend Joshua Speed took him into his home and cared for him personally until he stabilized. Lincoln's ability to function, let alone lead a nation through civil war, was not due to willpower alone. He built a circle of support that helped him cope. Friends like Speed and William Herndon offered emotional grounding. His wife Mary Todd, despite her own struggles, was fiercely protective of him. And most critically, Lincoln learned to lean on humor, storytelling, and an iron sense of purpose as tools to balance the darkness he often felt inside. In fact, some historians believe that it was Lincoln's empathy, patience, and wisdom developed by dealing with his weaknesses that made him uniquely suited to guide the country. Beethoven is one of the most celebrated composers in history. His symphonies and music reshaped the world of music. But as many of you know, Beethoven composed some of his greatest works after he had gone completely deaf. Talk about a weakness. Beethoven began losing his hearing in his late 20s. For a musician, this was a devastating blow. He was terrified the public would find out. In a letter, he confessed his despair and even wrote that he considered ending his life. His deafness became his greatest weakness. Not just physically, but emotionally, spiritually, and professionally. But Beethoven didn't give up. With help from his close friends and assistants, he learned to live and create music in new ways. He used notebooks to communicate. His assistants helped him hear by attaching wooden rods to his piano so he could feel the vibrations through his jawbone. He also relied on his extraordinary memory and understanding of how instruments sounded. Support from patrons and friends was essential. His publisher, Anton Schindler, helped him manage his affairs, and a small group of noble supporters ensured he had enough income to continue composing. Despite everything, Beethoven went on to write some of the most profound music the world has ever heard after he was profoundly deaf, including the Ninth Symphony with its soaring Ode to Joy. Yes, weaknesses that are given to us in life can help us move from strength to strength. As you think about your own weaknesses, do they seem insurmountable? Mine do at times as well. But here's what I've learned. The strength you gain in getting help and overcoming weaknesses propels you to the next level in your life. In 2023, I was at the U.S. Track and Field Championships, sitting in Hayward Field at the University of Oregon, where the championships were held, is always a thrilling experience. The orange track and green trees make Hayward Field one of the most famous track and field venues in the world. When it came time for the 3,000-meter men's steeplechase, the best runners in the United States stepped up to the start line. Among them was Bernard Keter, a Kenyan-born professional runner who had run in the previous Olympics. Also another professional, Isaac Updike, who ran for Oregon in college and had since turned professional, and Mason Fairlich, an Olympian who hoped to win these U.S. trials. But also stepping up to the line that day was a young recent college graduate, Kenneth Rooks, who had just weeks earlier won the NCAA championships and broke the 46-year-old record set by Henry Marsh. So as I sat watching the start of the race, I wondered how Rooks would do against these seasoned professionals. The race started with Rooks running in the middle of the pack. Now, the steeplechase includes some serious barriers that the runners must jump over as they run, and these barriers are fixed and large and don't move. They sit 36 inches high. And two laps into the race, with the runners packed together in a tight running group, the runner directly in front of Kenneth got confused leading up to the barrier, slowed, and stutter-stepped. Kenneth, who was preparing to jump, had to stop, and the only thing Kenneth could do was fall over the barrier and to the ground. By the time he stood up and recovered, he was 30 yards behind. The entire stadium let out a groan as he did. I was so disappointed. Here was this young rookie trying his hand at professional racing, and his race ends with him falling over a barrier. Well, Ken said at the moment he had a split-second decision to make. Should he step off the track or get back in the race? And he got back in. Standing near me was the women's track and field coach from Kenneth's college team. And I heard her say in that moment, "Watch this. Ken will win this race." and she started to yell instructions to Kenneth each time he passed by our position. Well, something strange happened. Kenneth started picking up his pace. He pursued the pack of professional runners, closing the gap with each lap they ran. And as he closed the gap, he realized he was in a much better position than he thought. And it occurred to him that if he caught up, he could actually win. To those of us watching, it was clear that Kenneth was running at a faster pace than the rest of the runners. And as he caught the pack with one lap left in the race, it looked like if he could maintain his faster pace, he just might win, or at least place in the top three and go to the Olympic Games. Well, another thing happened. As he caught the pack, the entire stadium full of people, they all came to their feet. Seeing someone who fell catch the pack and have a chance to win was something unbelievable. And everyone, including me, started to cheer. As Kenneth and the runners turned in the final turn and started for home, Kenneth was in third place and passed the runners in front of him to win the U.S. Championships. The coach near me was going crazy, yelling and cheering. Her prediction was true. He indeed did win. In listening to Ken's post-race interview, he said that when he fell, he didn't know if he had the strength to catch the other runners. But when he realized that he had the strength, he realized he could win. Likewise, when we fall in life, it's the getting back up and trying again that gives us more strength to attempt the next time. Don't give up. Keep showing up. Things that seemed impossible yesterday will seem more possible today if you just keep trying. Over the years, I've gained a deep appreciation and respect for the value of just trying, simply showing up. And starting where you are is sometimes all you can and often all you need to do. Trying is enough. And regardless of your level of experience, your failures, or the beliefs you hold on your belief window of your potential, wherever you are in life, you just need to show up and try. Try to listen to the patient instruction that life and God have in store for you. Try to imitate the movements of others. Try to ignore the negative self-talk when you feel that you don't measure up. And try to focus on the joys in the learning, in the work of it, instead of the defeat and the failure. And amidst all your trying, recognize that others around you are in the middle of their own trying as well. A Christian missionary couple was called to Africa to serve deep in the heart of the continent. When they got to the coast, they were told that they would be taking heavy machinery to the missionary center at their outpost in Zaire. They had a whole truckload of heavy machinery. And when they got the truck completely loaded, it weighed about 8 tons. That soon turned out to be a problem. The road that led to where they were going passed over many rivers and streams and over deep ravines. The bridges were crude. They were made of logs tied together with vines. Some of the bridges had 3T on the sign next to it, meaning the weight limit was 3 tons. Some had 6T, but none of them had 8T written on them. The truck was too heavy to cross. The missionary was deeply concerned, and his wife said, "Well, what are we going to do about the weight? We'll have to leave some stuff behind." And the missionary said, "There isn't anything I can do to lighten the load. I'll just have to reinforce the bridges." So that's what they did. They started out, and at each bridge, they would stop, and with considerable work, sometimes dangerous work, because the rivers were infested with crocodiles, they would cut down trees, strengthen the bridge, and rebuild it to the point where it could carry the 8 tons. And thus, they delivered their supplies. And that's the thing about trying, isn't it? Each time you try, despite the lack of strength of the bridge or the chasms or the gaps in your life, you strengthen those bridges. Your talents rise and your gaps are spanned and your weaknesses become strengths. So when you don't feel like trying, how can you stay in the game, so to speak? Well, here's a few suggestions. First, do something today. An astute counselor once said, "Whatever your present marriage relationship, you can do something today that can change it for the better." Many husbands and wives who seek help initially believe that their problems are so bad or have gone on for so long that change is impossible. Yet, changing behavior can start with very simple acts. My experience with hundreds of couples and individuals has taught me that even simple solutions can have far-reaching positive effects, and that every couple can do something different today that will improve themselves and their marriage. A kind gesture, an unexpected kiss on the cheek, a thoughtful word of appreciation can have a ripple effect that will invite and encourage goodwill throughout the week. In fact, it's often through some of our simplest actions that some of the greatest changes in our life occur. While solutions to long-standing problems may initially seem impossible, we can do something today that will move us along the right path. Doing something today is really a powerful concept. No matter what happened yesterday, no matter how much I failed in not overcoming my habit, I can do something today. I don't have to let my past dictate my future, even if it's my recent past. The next suggestion for gaining the ability to try is this. You may not have to have all the answers. Just do a little bit more of what works and a little bit less of what doesn't. It means each day you whittle away by adding more of what works. A similar principle of trading down can be easily seen in the life of a smoker who is addicted to nicotine, who lowers the number of cigarettes he smokes each day and trades down to a nicotine patch or a nicotine gum as his body is getting used to lower and lower levels of nicotine. Then, after his capacity is increased and his dependency is decreased, the step to total abstinence is more easily believed and achieved. Doing more of what works involves exactly what you're doing right now: listening, trying, taking a hint here and there, and building your resolve a little bit more. Just do a little bit more of what works. Now, moving from strength to strength also involves taking a bit of a risk. It's simple. It's easy in life to get used to doing things the way you've always done them. But we don't grow stronger that way, do we? It's when we step outside our normal routine, our normal circumstances, that we see and grow in new ways. In the early 2000s, Tony Fadell was a little-known engineer. He had an idea, a small digital music player with a built-in store so people could easily buy songs and carry their library anywhere. He pitched the idea to companies like Real Networks and Philips. They passed. The market didn't exist. MP3 players were still what people used in the day. Fadell had no product, no team, no funding. He was almost broke, but he believed in the vision, so he took a huge risk. He kept developing the prototype using his own savings. Eventually, he got a meeting at Apple, which at the time, Apple was trying to recover from the 1990s. Steve Jobs at Apple was intrigued when he heard the idea, and Apple offered Fadell a contract role. No guarantees. He'd have to build a team, a supply chain, and a shipping product in under a year. Fadell could have said no. It was risky, high pressure, and Apple was not yet the behemoth company that it would become. Instead, he took the risk. He leaned in. He pushed himself in ways he never had. He recruited obsessively, made sleepless runs to China to fix supply issues, and built the first iPod, a product that would launch Apple into the modern era. Years later, he took another risk, leaving Apple at its peak to co-found Nest, a smart thermostat company. Everyone thought it was a niche and wouldn't succeed, but Google eventually bought it for $3.2 billion. In the late 1990s, Keanu Reeves was a skyrocketing actor. He'd starred in movies like Speed and The Matrix. Studios were eager to pay him millions of dollars for blockbuster roles. But then in the middle of all this momentum, Reeves turned down a $12 million offer to star in Speed 2, Cruise Control. Why? Because the script was weak and he wanted to grow. Instead of taking the money, he chose to perform as Hamlet in a small experimental theater in Winnipeg, Canada. To Hollywood, this made no sense, but to Reeves, it was essential. He later said he needed to feel something real, something that challenged him and helped him reconnect with his craft, not just his image. It was a massive risk. Actors in his position rarely walk away from that kind of payday. Some said he was sabotaging his career, but instead of shrinking, he deepened as an actor and a person. So what about you and me? What if we step out of our comfort zone? We just might find the strength we need to move forward in life from strength to strength. So take some time today. to think about your life in a sequence of strengths that you have learned and developed, and consider what God needs you to learn next. It just may be the insight you need to take you to the next important step in life. And watch, you will have a bit more perspective to help you stay in the game, find help for your weakness, and become a stronger person along the way. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And don't forget to share this podcast with a friend. And join us next week for another podcast as we learn to open our eyes to who and what we can become.